Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Behind the Player podcast brought to you by Survival Challenge. I'm your co-host, William Hermana, and my other co-host is none other than Michael Albright. How are you doing today?
I'm great. I'm preparing for fall orientation in the COVID era, and everything's different, and I'm trying to roll with the punches and not get knocked out. So that's what I've been up to.
No more CVS incidents?
No, yeah, last call, Jordan, somebody literally drove into one, our CVS in town, some kind of a disorderly incident. But yeah, CVS is repaired, and pharmaceutical sales are back in business.
Awesome. Well, this is really exciting because we have our first ever Season 1 interview. And even though it's been a long time and the details will be a little bit fuzzy, I'm very excited to hear because Season 1, honestly, looking back, I'm surprised that we even had some sort of video production. I remember I was just looking at the very first part of the episode 1 because I wanted to remember who was on the cast real quick before jumping into this. And I remember that, oh yeah, they had like some slideshow parts in there because there were some parts that literally just didn't have videos. So they just like, yep, here's a few photos. Here's some text about what happened. And I remember that kind of being the case for some good sections of the season. In fact, I think the Season 1, you can binge in like, I think like an hour or less even. So it's like very quick. But yeah, so it'll be great to hear some actual real behind the scenes stuff. And this podcast could very well be longer than the season itself that you could watch. So
I was one of those cameramen, William, and it was kind of an afterthought. They were worried about getting the challenge to exist. And I was talking to John, like, can we record some of this? Do you have like a camera? And John brought a camera, and you know, I was the one of the two cameramen Season 1, and it was pretty crazy. It was this older guy that was Bob's friend that did the intake videos, and I had a handheld camera that people kept unplugging and charging their cell phones at the cab, and I'm like, can you stop this? I'm trying to record this season, so let me plug in the damn camera, please. Thank you. It was that insane Season 1.
You were recording history, Michael. It was worth the fight.
Well, I always fight for video coverage, and when you watch our season, I equate it to watching Borneo. It's just so what we did capture is just I'm amazed we caught anything, and we'll get to some of the specifics with some intriguing confessionals that I threw together out of my ass, and that where we ended up shooting one third of them is kind of connected to that point. So yeah, it was just an interesting season, and I'm kind of curious because I was near when John and Bob created the idea. It was at the pool at the Malia Hotel in Orlando. I was nearby talking and probably pounding the moonshine with somebody that played in Season 3, and then they were like, "We're going to do this game up in Maine," and I heard about it. And I'm like, heck yeah, if you need any help, let me know. However I can be helpful. And then it ended up happening the next month, and I was like, shoot, okay, yeah, I'll book a plane ticket. So how did you hear about Season 1, Jordan? I'm just kind of curious, how the heck did we find you and get you out there and be one of the only few women that was in Season 1 before we had gender equity later on?
Yeah, I actually won a trip to the Nicaragua finale of Survivor. So while I was there, I stayed in the hotel that like all the survivors are at, and where they have like they're all down in the lobby the night before. So I didn't know that they were going to be down there. I just happened to be down at the front desk for something, and I spotted, I think I actually saw Bob, Peggy, and Russell Hance, and my dad had gone with me. So I ran back to the elevator and like ran into the room, and I was like, Dad, Bob Crowley's down there, and Russell Hance is down there, and Peggy's down there. And I'm like, we have to get your shoes on. We have to go down there. So we went back down, and I just started introducing myself to like all the survivors that I saw there that I knew. I mean, Coach was there, and then later a bunch of the people that were on Nicaragua, I met them. But we spent a lot of time talking to Bob and Peggy because they are the sweetest people. Mm-hmm. So we kept just like drifting back to them and continuing conversations with them. And by the end of the night, Bob was like, hey, find me on Facebook, add me. And so I did. And then not too long after that, he posted saying that if you were interested in playing the game of Survivor, there was going to be this Survivor game in Maine. So I messaged them and I was like, I'm interested, but I don't know if I can get the time off school. And so Peggy responded and said, well, we will save a spot for you. You check and see if you can. And at the time I was like, oh, they like me so much. They're going to save a spot for me. But in reality, I think they were like, oh, look, we have another female. Let's save a spot for her. But yeah, I just saw it on Facebook. I didn't know Michael, you, when I went. I didn't know John. I didn't know Steve Pickett. I didn't know anybody except the one time that I had met Bob and Peggy, and that was it. So I was very much a random person that just happened to be able to get in.
And that's pretty amazing. And I don't, and I'm not trying to be mean. I don't remember meeting you and your dad. And do you remember meeting some really fat guy in the lobby? I don't remember. And I feel horrible if you remember meeting me and I don't remember meeting you. I don't know.
No, I don't think I ever met you or John or Steve.
Okay.
Yeah. I think like you guys were there, but I had no idea who you were. You had no idea who I was. So, I mean, we probably mostly went around talking to the survivors, like the people that we had seen. But I don't think that I spent much time talking to just like all the other people that were down there, like all the other fans. So I think I have some pictures with you guys in the background, like sitting there getting all your stuff signed. But no, at the time, I did not know who you were. And so I don't think I ever talked to you.
That's okay. We've known each other quite well now, so.
Yes, for sure. Lots of good memories since then.
And it's crazy to look back that that's really how you found out, because for those who don't know, Jordan went from player to volunteer to tribe handler to tribe handler, like overseer, to now you're hosting the property that current day Survival Challenge is playing on. Like, did you ever think that you'd be this involved when you said that you were interested in playing this event with Peggy?
Absolutely not. I actually, after I played the first year, I was really excited when I heard they were going to have a second season. And so I was like, I want to play. But for that season, they had it, I think it was at the end of August. So once I saw when the dates were, that was the very beginning of my school year. So as a teacher who teaches kindergarten especially, leaving like the first week of school is impossible. Like having them have a sub when they don't even really know me or the school or the routines is just crazy. And so when I saw the dates, I was like, well, I guess I probably won't be able to go. But then my husband, Ian, applied for it and he got selected to play in season two, and then I was like, I can't miss watching him play. So I talked to my principal and I talked to my superintendent, and they were like, yeah, that's okay, you can go. So I had one day at school with my students the first day that I met them, and then I had a sub the next 2 days so that we could go to Maine and Ian could play, and I volunteered and got to watch him play. And then we came back. We got back really, really early Monday morning, probably like 2:30 or 3 in the morning. And then I got up I slept for a couple hours, and then I got up to teach the next day. And then after that, they moved it to the summer, which as a teacher definitely works out better for me. So once it moved to the summer, then I was like, I plan on doing this every year that I can do it. I loved going to Maine and getting to see Bob and Peggy and their family and getting to catch up with everybody. But when Bob and Peggy were kind of ready to be retired, because this is a lot of work to plan and get stuff ready for and to host the event. So they were kind of ready to be retired. And so the property I live on is similar to the property that Bob and Peggy had, and we have lots of trails and great places for campsites. And so when I heard that they were looking for a new property, I contacted John and I was like, hey, I have a great property if you are looking for somewhere to have the event. And so he came out and we kind of showed him around the property and he talked to the production team and we decided to move it out here, which I'm thankful for because no matter where it was, I was going to be there. This has become a part of my life. These people are my, I mean, you guys are my family. And so I was going to be there no matter where it was, but just getting to bring everyone to my property and getting to know that I'm a big part of this now is really cool. And Ian and I absolutely love doing it. And we're so glad to be able to be a part of it like this.
What was your, so it was kind of a whirlwind for season one. You had heard about it, then they reached out to you. Then what was your prep or did you do anything specifically? You couldn't watch season zero because that wouldn't be possible, but what did you do to, you know, prepare yourself? Did you like research the property or what were you able to do to prepare?
Well, looking back, I didn't really do a lot. I definitely probably should have and could have done more, but I was just so excited to be able to do this and go to Bob's property. And I didn't really think a lot about like what I need to, what can I be doing to prepare for it other than do like working out and doing some running and things like that. But I didn't really do a lot of extra to prepare for it. I definitely probably should have gone back and kind of reviewed some of the past seasons of Survivor and tried to do that a little bit more. But I don't know. I just didn't really do a lot. And then I know you also mentioned trying to look at the property, but Bob didn't actually even own the property yet. He was like in the process of trying to get the property. Which is kind of funny to me that we had it on there and he didn't even own it. But yeah, I didn't really do a lot of it. I definitely would prepare way differently now than I did back then. I was just so nervous and excited and all these emotions all at once.
What are your memories of the actual, you know, traveling to location? How did you get there? And what was it like the first time you saw where you were going to be playing and all that?
Well, to get there, Ian was actually supposed to go with me, but he, as it got closer, he couldn't end up getting the time off work. So I asked I didn't want to go by myself to Maine, and I knew I was going to be tired after the event. And so I asked my dad if he would go with me. And so we flew out together. And then he dropped me off at the property, like at the house that I later found out they didn't actually own. And then I got there and I definitely felt like I was on Survivor. Like everyone was very much like, okay, get out of the car. All right, you can move on. John searched through my bag, which when I say searched, I mean it was like a very minimal search. He was kind of like, all right, open up your bag and show me what you have. But I could have very easily I could have easily snuck stuff in if I had tried to, but that's not who I am. So I did not do that. But I'm sure that people did because he was so busy with just trying to get everything done that he didn't have time to really like sift through stuff. But then I just sat in the house for hours. I want to say I got there maybe around 6 or 6:30, and then I didn't see anybody again until it was dark outside. So I was sitting there for hours just waiting for more information or for someone to come tell me what to do next. So then I believe it was Jen maybe that came in, I was handed a blindfold and then I was taken outside onto this like hay rack thing. And Bob was loading people on. So we were all sitting together on there blindfolded And we weren't supposed to take the blindfolds off. And then Bob got on the tractor and started driving us somewhere. And all of a sudden, we stopped. And Bob said we were stuck in the mud because they had gotten a ton of rain right before we got there. So we were stuck in the mud. So Bob asked two people to get off and help push. And they had to take their blindfolds off if they were going to help get us unstuck. So Bob was just kind of like, don't tell John that you took these off. And so they pushed, we got unstuck, they climbed back on, and then we went around this, like down a path around this fire, and John came and kind of introduced himself and introduced the event, and then Bob came out and gave a little speech, and then we were still, nobody could talk. And then we were taken out to random spots, which at the time I assumed that they knew exactly where we were, but they were definitely just random spots around in the woods that we were dropped off completely alone with a piece of plastic and the couple things that we were allowed to bring with us. And that's where we spent the night. So I spent the night completely alone out in the main woods with a piece of plastic, and it was very, very cold that night.
I think it was 39 degrees because we were in, what, the second, third week of September for season one? Something like that. It was later, yeah. 39 degrees. So we had the heat in season seven. We had the monsoon in season six, and we had the polar vortex in season one. So
yes, it was so cold.
So, Jordan, was this the first LRG you ever played?
Yes, I didn't even really know these existed before Bob posted about this game on Facebook. And then once I got there and started talking to people, then I found out that these actually take place all over the country, and there are even online games. I had no idea about any of that.
So at this point, right, because this is all I can think about, right, like you have no expectation of what's about to happen. You just know that Bob Crowley from Survivor is hosting this event that's supposed to be like Survivor, and your first night is just by yourself in the woods. Are you currently thinking to yourself, what I got myself into?
Yes. It was... I think before, when I had said, like, I had agreed to do it, I didn't really realize that when they said it was going to be like Survivor, I didn't realize how much like Survivor it was going to be. And so, and maybe that's part of why I didn't really think to do much in preparation for it. I didn't really know what to expect, but I definitely did not expect to be dropped off in the middle of the woods by myself for an entire night. And I tend to be a little afraid of the dark anyway. And so when I was dropped off in the middle of the wide open woods and it was dark outside, I just kept telling myself, just close your eyes, just go to sleep. There's nothing around. You'll be fine. Just to get myself through the night. But I was not expecting that, but I'm actually really proud of myself for being able to do that and not wanting to quit or not crying or just getting so overwhelmed. I just did it. And that was pretty cool to see that I can do something like that.
Were you able to hear anyone nearby, or did you hear animals, or what all? Like, I've heard the stories from some of your castmates about the weird animals that they actually did hear, the animals they thought they heard. What did you hear?
I didn't hear any people. And at night, like I said, I was scared of the dark, so I just was like, don't think about it. Don't listen to anything. Just go to sleep. So that night, I didn't hear anything or notice anything. But the next morning, when the sun was coming up, I woke up and I just kind of lifted my head and looked straight ahead. And I saw a bunch of pigs walking around. And I was like, oh my gosh, there's wild pigs out here. I'm so lucky that I didn't get trampled in the middle of the night. Then later when I actually got up, then I saw that they were in like an enclosed fence. So I actually was fine. But when I just saw them and I thought they were walking around wild, it definitely made me a little nervous. And then as I was continuing to just wait for someone to come and tell me what to do next, I saw this guy walk down the path kind of ahead of where I was sleeping. And he had, all I knew was he had this cowboy hat on and he was walking by and like he smiled as he walked past me. And that's it. Later, I found out that it was Brett who walked past me. And when he was walking past, he saw me laying there and I had my blanket over my head and wrapped up because, like I said, it was so cold. So I was just trying to stay warm. But when I heard somebody walking, I actually thought it was somebody coming to get me and like move on with what was happening. So I like popped up and looked to see. And then when I saw it was just some random guy walking past, I was like, oh, okay, it's not for me. But he said that he saw somebody laying there, but they weren't moving. And he was concerned that I had like died or something. And then he just saw my head pop up and look at him.
God.
Yeah.
Wow. I never heard that story and I'm glad no one did. It was our safety. Who ended up being our safety person on production team was in California for season one and played in Williams season. So we were all flying by the seat of our pants. Bob didn't own the land. We had confessionals in outhouses. There were pigs running around. Like, wow, season one is so crazy.
It is. I'm surprised we survived.
So then somebody came and got you later on that morning, I believe, right?
Yeah, and I don't remember who came and got me, but I remember there were like four of us. They came on I don't know if it was like a golf cart or something like that. So they got four of us. We still couldn't talk, and they took us out to a trail. And there were like patches of sunlight coming in and we were all trying to just stand in the sunlight to warm up because it was so cold. So we're all standing there, but we can't talk. And actually, I want to say that Mike, I might have been standing with you.
Okay. All right.
I think so. But we were just standing there. Again, like waiting for someone to tell us what to do. We still weren't allowed to talk. And then eventually we made our way in for the first challenge. But it seemed like a lot of just like downtime waiting around, especially at the beginning.
Do you remember at all what your first impressions of the other players were once you finally got to see them that morning?
I don't really remember first impressions. I mean, I saw Brett because he had his cowboy hat on, and so I knew that I had seen him already. And so it was kind of like, oh, well, maybe him and I will end up on the same tribe together. That'll be good because we had like this, not necessarily a connection, but he had walked past where I was sleeping. So if we end up on the same tribe together, we can talk about that, you know? We didn't end up on the same tribe together, but I don't really remember a lot of first impressions. There also wasn't a lot of time for that because as soon as we got in, John explained our first challenge and we were off to our first challenge. So there wasn't a lot of time to really necessarily think about that a lot. And if I did have first impressions, I don't really remember what they were.
Did you think that there would be gender equity, or were you expecting to have to be in a underdog scenario? Just, you know, when you look at gender, was that something you just had? Was it relevant at all to you as you started to see? Did you think it would be balanced? And when you got there, seeing it was like 3 to, I don't even remember the numbers, 3 to 15, I think, 3 to 18, 3 to 15, yeah.
I didn't really necessarily expect it to be balanced as far as gender. But again, I didn't really know what to expect going into it, so I didn't really have any expectations going into it. But I wouldn't say I was surprised when I saw that there were only three females. I mean, it makes sense that just in general, males, like more males would be interested in doing something like that than females. So I wasn't surprised, but I didn't expect it either way.
And the challenge, what do you remember from that first day challenge wise? Because I'm trying to remember. The one thing I do remember is we didn't have a specified challenge area for season one. And I don't know about season two if it was similar. But we were bouncing all over the woods because it was like wherever we could throw together a challenge is where it occurred. So,
right. Actually, I would say I probably remember. Well, actually, that first challenge that we had to do, and I don't know if it was necessarily a challenge, but I just remember that we were not allowed to talk during the first challenge. We had been given a map and we had different locations that we could go to and try to trade. I think we had coins or something and we could try to trade for any supplies that we wanted to try to get. And so I remember that one so well just because we had to try to work together, but we couldn't even talk. And we ended up getting kind of lost and it took us a while to find a table. And once we found a table with stuff, we were kind of like, this is our only option. We don't have time to go try to find a different table and see what else is out there. And honestly, I don't even remember what we actually ended up getting from it. I know there was some peanut butter there that we tried to get, but I don't think we ended up getting it. I just remember spending so long trying to work together without being able to talk and finally finding that table. That's about all I remember from that challenge. And then the first challenge where we could actually talk was we each had to go from station to station, and one station was like a jailbreak, and then you had to put together a puzzle. Another station was slingshots, and the slingshots kept breaking because they were, I think Bob had made the slingshots, but they kept breaking. So Bob was sitting right there trying to fix them as the challenge was going on. And then I think the last station was like a grappling hook in the sand, maybe, something like that. There might've been one other one, but I remember that challenge specifically because while one person from each tribe was going through it at a time and the rest of us were standing there waiting. And so Joseph came up to me, who was on my tribe, and we kind of talked a little bit, and then he approached me about working together. So I made an alliance with him. And then while he was out running the course, Steve Morin came, who's also in my tribe. He also approached me about working together and creating an alliance. So in the first challenge, I had these two different people who wanted to work with me and who I had kind of agreed to an alliance with. And I was like, oh, now what am I going to do? I have these two different people and they don't know that I've talked to the other person and I'm in an alliance with both of them. So that challenge is definitely one that I remember very well because of that.
All right. So you established those alliances. What was your perspective on the other people in your tribe? Just the ones you didn't have an alliance with, what were the reactions to those other people?
I mean, I loved my tribe. Everyone on it was great. And I felt like we worked really well together. And for that first reward day, I think we did a really good job of trying to split up what we are doing in challenges and trying to kind of separate our roles. And we ended up coming in second place for the reward day. We were right in the middle. We didn't win the TP reward, but we got a tent. So we had some sort of shelter to sleep in for that first night. But I felt like we all worked really well together, and I was excited to go into the next day of immunity challenges together. So we got to our campsite. We set up our tent, but we set our tent up on a slope. So we all started kind of separated when we were laying in the tent, but by the morning, almost half of the tent wasn't even being used because we had all slowly slid down the slope all to one side. So that was fun sleeping that way. But then the next morning, Steve Jackson had somehow hurt his foot, and he was having a really hard time walking. I mean, he was like limping, like barely able to put any pressure on it. And we went up to the challenge site to start the next day, and he ended up pulling himself out because he felt like he just couldn't compete because of his foot, because it was really hurting him. And so he went ahead and pulled himself out, which was really rough because that put us at a disadvantage before the very first challenge, because we were already down a person. And in hindsight, I wish that I had asked John or even told Steve to just stay in the challenge. We would end up losing because we would be competing with one less person, but then we could vote him out at tribal, like just know that we go to tribal council first and vote him out. But that way we don't go into it down a number, because for the rest of the day, we were constantly hurting because they were able to let people sit out and rest during challenges, and we never got to do that. So we just kept getting more and more exhausted, and then we kept losing more and more. So I think that really hurt our tribe, just that we lost somebody before challenges even began that day. So that was disappointing because we were, I felt like we had a good thing. We had a good tribe, and it was disappointing that that all fell apart because of an injury.
That morning, when did we do the outhouse confessionals? When was that, Jordan? Was that the beginning of the day? Because I don't think Steve even, I know he was figuring out his injury, because I don't think I interviewed him that morning.
Yeah, I think it was after, I don't know, maybe the first challenge or the first couple challenges. I want to say it was like midday. I think Steve was already gone, and maybe one other person. I'm trying to think of who got voted out second from our tribe.
Was it Jim or was it Jim
I'm Ferdinand, thinking it was
gentleman, yeah. Maybe or someone else.
It was Mark, because he had ended up like getting this huge gash in his shin from one of the challenges, and he was like, you guys can just vote me out next because I have this injury in my leg and I don't want to slow you guys down. So he offered to be the next person voted out. So it was actually Mark second. And do you remember if you talked to him in the outhouse?
I know it was, I think both injuries I had to get later, because I remember Steve being in like a some weird chair or something over by like where the road was. And I don't know where I interviewed Mark, if they were both captured after the fact, because I know that Jim and you and Joe and Mark, I'm pretty sure we all talked in the outhouse, I believe. And then I threw the other tribe, Micmac on a rock, I think, and the other group somewhere. I was just like, we need to get real quick confessionals, like jump in the outhouse. And you're like, people are like, who is this guy and what is he doing? And John's like, let's go, we gotta do the challenge. It was like the age-old challenge versus production, like we gotta record some of this so we can watch it in 8 years and know what the hell happened.
yeah I don't know if it was before or after Mark got voted out, but it was, I would say it was probably midday.
And then you, what do you else you remember from the first day? Because I know I barely remember anything, and I should have researched, but I was emailing people all day. So what else do you remember from the first day? Because I, towards the end of the first day, once you guys went back to camp, I have some interesting things from the back end that kind of tie into the second day of the game, besides like day zero.
Well, I don't remember exactly, like, I don't remember exactly where the days break up, but I know, so after Steve got, or Steve pulled himself out, then Mark volunteered to be eliminated because of his injury on his leg. So then it was down to Jim, Joseph, Steve, and I. And so I was getting more kind of stressed out because I had talked to Joseph and I had talked to Steve in that one challenge. And so I kind of had an alliance with both of them, but I hadn't really told either one of them that I was working with the other person. And like, this is not necessarily the game that I would expect myself to play, like having all these different alliances. I'm definitely more of like a loyal person, a loyal player. So it was really stressing me out, and especially, and then knowing that Jim was the only other person on our tribe and I didn't really have an alliance with him. I mean, I liked him and I didn't want to get rid of him. I thought that he he was definitely an asset for our tribe, but he was the only one that I didn't have an alliance with. So, and I don't remember, we probably voted him out as well on day one, I think. I guess this would be day two maybe, because day one was just the reward day. So I guess this would actually be on day two when we are voting people out anyway. But I don't remember a lot of specifics from day one. The only other challenge that I remember that really sticks out to me, and I don't know which day this was, but we had those cubes that they were like a puzzle, and we had to stack them so it was this vertical puzzle basically. And Jim and I were the two, we had to pick two people from our tribe to do the puzzle, and Jim and I were on the puzzle and everybody else was kind of standing and watching, and it was a difficult puzzle. Oh, actually, the other tribe members had to go swim across the pond and collect the pieces. That's what it was. And then bring them back. And then Jim and I did the puzzle. And it was a difficult puzzle. But I like puzzles and that kind of thing. And we ended up winning that challenge, which was really exciting for me to be able to be one of the people on the puzzle and help pull out a win for our tribe. That was really exciting to be the person on that end doing that. And I mean, it's not like we flew through it by any means. Like, we had gotten to the point where John was like, okay, the whole tribe can go and work on the puzzle, but we had at least gotten far enough that once the tribe stepped in, we just had a few more pieces and then we were able to win. So that was really exciting. I enjoyed that challenge a lot.
All right. Yeah, that was fun to watch. I mean, and I'm still trying to just remember these challenges, and they're just so different. Because I think the next day is probably our key marquee challenge from that year was that obstacle course. I wish it's one of the things that wasn't always incorporated in future seasons. I think maybe season two, they might have done it, but we didn't really get back there again. But that was one of the big ones from the next day, because we had a new appearance of some people, because the game had been established and season one was so different and dynamic that you guys go back to camp. And what did you anticipate happening, and were you surprised that survivors were actually there?
Yeah, I was super surprised that the survivors came, and so I think they came on Saturday morning and that was like the first thing that happened. John was talking to us and brought them out and introduced us, and we ended up, I don't remember exactly how we picked, but each tribe, or like one tribe, got to pick out of the three survivors, which were Eric Reichenbach and Terry Dietz and Boo. So out of those three, I don't remember which tribe got to pick first, but then I think we got to pick second. And maybe it had gone by who won the rewards or something like that. I don't remember exactly. But we ended up with Eric on our tribe. And that was really exciting for me, getting to see some more survivors. I was not expecting that at all. But we were told that the three survivors could not be voted out that day, so they had immunity for all day Saturday, which, not that I went into it wanting to vote out Eric right away, but it was kind of disappointing because our tribe had spent all day Friday working together, getting to know each other, and building this bond together. So then when Eric came in, he just, like, I didn't have that same bond built with him. And I think that was the only downside of not letting them start with us when we started, is that we didn't have those same connections with them. But for my tribe specifically, our numbers, we kept losing people because we were at such a disadvantage from the beginning, that we are down to the end, and we were like, well, if we can't vote Eric out, he's going to be the only one left on our tribe if he has immunity. So I remember that Eric was there. So it was down to Eric, Steve, and Joseph, and me. And Eric, I could tell that Eric was not interested in working with me. I definitely wasn't the strongest in challenges. I wasn't probably the weakest, maybe. I don't know. Maybe I was. But I wasn't the strongest. But I had built, I had good alliances, and I had people that I trusted in Joseph and Steve. So I wasn't too worried. But Eric definitely was not interested in working with me. I could tell that from the beginning. And Steve had approached me, and he could kind of tell that I had also been working with Joseph, and I had made my alliance with Joseph first. And so I felt like if I had to choose one of them, I felt like I needed to go with Joseph. That's the loyal part in me. Like, that's who I made my alliance with first. So I'll go with Steve as long as I can. But then when it comes down to it, I have to go with the person that I agree to work with first. So I think Steve had kind of felt that as we are getting fewer in numbers. So when it was down to us four, he basically approached me and said that he could tell that I was with Joseph. And so Joseph and I ended up voting for Steve, and Steve and Eric ended up voting for me. So it was a tie. Steve and I ended up going to fire making, which was kind of embarrassing because neither one of us could start a fire with flint, even though I had kind of been practicing on the tribe, and they had kind of, like, we had kind of been talking about how you make fire with flint, but I had never been able to do it. And that's definitely something that I didn't practice. And I always say, I don't know why people go on Survivor and don't practice making fire with flint, but I did that myself. So, like I said, kind of embarrassing, but we couldn't make the fire with flint. They ended up giving us, I think they gave us lighters or matches. I don't know, one of the two. But I ended up winning the fire making just barely. Steve was right behind me. So he ended up getting voted out, and then it was me, Joseph, and Eric. And I was really worried at that point, because if we couldn't vote Eric out, then that means that Joseph and I are voting for each other. So ultimately, Eric gets to decide who to vote out, and obviously he was going to vote me out. So at the next tribal council that we went to, we kind of made a pitch to John about being able to vote him out, because Terry had already gotten voted out at the previous tribal council because he had to leave anyway. So John allowed them to vote out Terry instead of voting out another person and then Terry also leaving. So since that had just happened, we asked John about being able to vote for Eric. And Eric, I think he also, since he had lost Steve, who he seemed like he was kind of working with, I think he didn't really care about being there and wasn't, like, if he got voted out, he didn't really care. So Eric was even like, you know, they should be able to vote me out if they want. And so John and Steve and whoever talked about it finally agreed that we could vote Eric out if we wanted to. So Joseph and I voted Eric out, and the two of us ended up going into the merge. Luckily, we won the last challenge because only one tribe was going to tribal council that time. So we got very lucky in that. Otherwise, it would have come down to fire making, and Joseph could definitely make fire with Flint. So I would have been out if we didn't win that challenge.
Kind of crazy looking back about how many several opportunities you were from getting out, and then somehow you made it to the merge. sounds like you're still impressed by it looking back.
Yeah, definitely. It's kind of cool to see how I was able to work through, and definitely a lot of it was also luck. But I was able to build alliances that could get me through the first part, which was really good. But yeah, I'm really proud of how I was able to kind of maneuver through that first part of the game.
If they're not like going into merge, say there was one person that you could keep that ended up going home pre-merge, if you could keep one person who ended up going home, who would it be?
Like from my tribe or from any of the tribes?
From any of the, who do you think like would have helped you most in the merge who wasn't there?
Probably Steve Morin. I think I really, I actually, looking back at it now, I think that I probably would have been better off at the merge if Steve and I had gone together instead of Joseph and I. I just think that Steve and I probably would have been able to strategize better and try to talk to the other two tribes better than Joseph and I did. So I do wish that I had been able to go to the merge with Steve, or that he had at least been able to be a part of it.
Gotcha. Well, after all that's said and done, tell us what the merge process was like and your first thoughts going into that situation.
For the merge, we merged at the campsite where the teepee was, so we at least had some shelter, but it was supposed to rain that night, and the teepee had an open part at the top, so rain was going to get in. So Joseph found this, I think it was like a trailer, it might have been an outhouse, I don't know. But he found this that was, it would provide more shelter than the teepee would, and definitely more shelter than just sleeping outside would. So we kind of got that cleaned up a little bit and used that for our shelter the night of the merge. And I'm glad we did, because it did rain, and I think it leaked a little bit, but definitely not as bad as it would have been in the teepee or just outside. So we were able to stay pretty dry, and we were also able to kind of talk and strategize a little bit. But I talked to the people at the merge, like I talked to the other tribes at the merge, but I wasn't able to strategize with them as much as I would have liked to. And that was partially because I had never played anything like this before, and I was still just like, I don't know what to expect. And I was just so just surprised still to even be there that I didn't really use the opportunities that I had probably as well as I should have. But again, I think Steve and I would have been able to work through that better than Joseph and I did. And so I I regret not having Steve there at the merge instead. But I talked and I was very friendly to everyone, just getting to know them. And Joseph was he annoyed people a little bit more than I did, which I was okay with, because then I felt like if it came down to them choosing between Joseph or me, they would choose to keep me because I was more likable and easier to be around than Joseph was. So I just kind of let him do that. I let him be the one that kind of bothered other people. And I just was the kind, nice person that talked to everybody.
Was that a big strategy play for you? Like, if I could just be nicer than most of the people on this tribe, I should do well?
It wasn't necessarily like a strategy, because that's just my personality. Like, I was just being myself, but it worked out well for me in that Joseph was not as likable as me. And I could feel that from the other people, that they preferred to talk to me or be around me over Joseph. And so as we are kind of going through that night and the next morning, I was like, okay, this should be okay, because I can stay even if they vote Joseph out, which, I mean, ideally him and I would be able to make it through a while together. So I at least had the person that I was the closest to with me. But if they had to choose somebody, vote him out and I'll find somewhere else to try to get in.
I remembered kind of the night before what happened, and I was told Steve Pickett and I were going to stay in the yurt, which we had been. But the other players are going to show up. But Terry Dietz had some kind of a transportation issue, so I think he showed up in the morning. But Boo and Eric showed up, and Eric seemed just confused in general. It was good to see Eric, but I was a little surprised because Boo was like all ready with like his game gear, and he had his funky overalls ready and a huge coat, and like he was ready. And Eric was just in like, I forget what the term is for like those early 90s coat or jacket things. I don't know. I think they're from the southwest of the country, but they just showed up and they were going to stay in the yurt. And and it was a unique experience because the players always talk about unique survivor experiences, and, you know, staying the night with a couple people in a yurt was definitely unique. And the funny thing, from one of the finales, Boo had crashed in our room before. So staying with Boo is kind of an old hat. It was just like, yo, Boo's, he slept on the floor of our room one time at one of the finales involving Russell, his buddy. But these dudes just show up, and I think they were mad, though, because back then I was a lot heavier, and I had sleep apnea, and I kept them up from my incessant snoring. So I remember Boo being pissed off in the morning and Eric just being generally confused, because as I understand it, he just was there, and he thought he was just coming out to hang out with Bob, and there was some kind of a charity event. I don't think he fully fathomed what was happening. What did he tell you guys?
Yeah, he told us that he didn't realize that he was actually supposed to be playing. He thought he was just coming to the event, I guess. So he showed up and entered the game wearing blue jeans,
which is a first and only occurrence in DWSC and SC history. I think it's like intentionally just an accidental wear. I think somebody in season 5 did Dan wear jeans too, maybe? Something, but I know in season early.
Have worn jeans because I criticize it every time. I think Dion from season 6 wore jeans, if I'm not mistaken. I've definitely seen people wear jeans more than a few times, and it's aggravated me still to this day.
And I hate jeans. I wouldn't wear jeans anywhere. I just don't like jeans. So wow, I can't even imagine wearing jeans just around. I never wear them, but the chafing and the running and the just sounds horrible. But
yeah, he took them off before every challenge because none of those challenges would be good while wearing jeans.
How is he as a new addition to the team? Because you guys had some trouble with, you know, some medical situations with people, and you had to lose another player, but In inserting Eric into the mix, I mean, he was going against Terry Dietz, a challenge legend, and Boo's Buad had a huge winning percentage in Fiji, so they were both pretty tough. But Eric was, how was he to the addition to the team?
It was really good. I mean, he was a great physical competitor for sure. And some of the challenges were, I mean, he had really great strategies going into some of the challenges. Like I think the one where we were like digging in the mud for to find, I don't know, like 10 balls or something like that. He kind of talked us through his idea, his strategy on basically just like going out, and he would dig through the mud and find all of the balls, and then the rest of us could start going and shooting them. I think we had to shoot them into a basket or something like that. But so in the beginning of the challenge, we were falling behind in points because he was digging through and finding all of them. But then for the second half of the challenge, it made it a lot easier for us to just be able to run up, grab a ball, and go and shoot it. And we didn't have to dig through and find it. And the reason, I mean, his reasoning for doing that was because if one person digs through and finds all of them, then they know where they've already looked. Where if he goes out and digs through and finds one, and then I go out and dig through and find another one, eventually we're all going to be digging where other people have already dug through the mud. So it ended up working out for us for that challenge specifically. And just in general, he was definitely a huge asset for our team. It just gave us another person that was physical and could do some of the physical things that we were struggling with.
As a big fan, those are three great guys to have out there. Nothing, we appreciate them. They're part of our family. But as a fan, who had been your ideal people to have gotten to play with that you didn't get a chance to? Like, if somebody else had been coming running over around the hill, who had been like Jordan's top three? Like, ooh, that I wish it would have been this person, and this person.
I don't know. I've never really thought about it. I mean, at that point, I had the only other time I had ever met survivors was at the Nicaragua finale. Mm-hmm. And so for me, it didn't necessarily matter who it was. It was more just about the fact that I got to spend time with survivors and like hear their stories about when they were on the show. And like, I just got to say that I had this time with survivors. I mean, now they're at our event pretty much every year. And so now it's just like, oh yeah, it's another person. Like, yeah, they were on the show, but they're just people. And it's a little bit different now, but back then it was really exciting just to have a survivor there.
And from your, as a fan, like you, that we have an edited version of, you know, all three of those men. Who seemed closest to what you were, you know, given from CBS, and who seemed the most different? Were they pretty much what you, who they looked like on your TV versus who they were in Maine standing there next to you? Was anything, you know, dramatically different? Or
I didn't really remember a lot about Boo or Terry from the first time he played either.
Okay.
I remembered Eric just because he had played more recently, and so I remembered a lot about him. So it was, I was excited that of the three, Eric was the one that I remembered the most. And so he was the one that ended up on our tribe and I got to spend time with him. And I would say, I mean, obviously from what you see on TV is going to be different from meeting them in real life, just because they can't show you all of each person. But it was cool to get to know Eric. I think Eric didn't invest a lot of time really talking to me or getting to know me because I think he perceived me as the weakest on the tribe. So I felt like from the very beginning, he was ready to vote me out, which makes sense. He's definitely more of a physical player, and I'm not as strong in that area of the physical challenges, so I get it. But I just felt like he wasn't really putting a lot of effort into talking to me or getting to know me. But it's fine. I enjoyed hearing his stories. I enjoyed hearing about his app that he was working on and things like that.
And on your tribe, you had another at the time. I know that's changed since, but there was another Survivor connection. Did that come up at all during the game, or was it just after the game? You know, you remember what I'm talking about?
I'm assuming you're talking about Joseph being married to Tanya Vance.
Yeah, which is now not a thing, but it was a thing. So I would imagine he wouldn't, you know, put a target on his back and talk about that. I wouldn't think, did he, or what did he?
I don't know who brought it up first. I believe we definitely talked about it. We all knew that he was married to her. I don't remember if someone else said, oh, hey, you're married to her, or if he just brought it up. But I feel like he just kind of brought it up and put it out in the open.
Okay. Yeah, we were scrambling, and I'm using that. It was mostly Bob and John. Like, I had nothing to do with casting then. It was just, I knew a lot of the people in your season just from over the years, but I didn't have anything to do with the actual casting. But there were a couple connections. There's another connection to somebody from the Survivor world. One of your female competitors. I mean, were you aware of that, and how open was she about her connection to
that? Ashley.
And that's from the Nicaragua finale, too. God bless it. I cut out there. Do you want me to repeat what I just said?
Oh, yeah. You might want to for William. I know what you were asking. But, you can do it for William.
There were only three women in season one, and one of them had a connection to a survivor. Do you want to elaborate on what that connection was?
Yeah. Ashley was Jane's daughter, we were pretty close to the same age. I don't know exactly how old Ashley is, but we're pretty close. She was on another tribe, but Jane was her mom, and everybody knew that because Jane was there watching. I don't know if she was really a volunteer. I think she was just a spectator. But she was definitely watching and cheering for Ashley and cheering for her tribe. And everybody definitely knew that Jane was her mom.
Were you worried that Jane was going to dump out your fire? Did you hear what I said there? I'm sorry, my internet sucks. Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Yep, I did. No, I wasn't worried about that. Honestly, more than anything, I was just worried that she was going to come down and try to give Ashley and her tribe information that other people didn't get, just because there wasn't really any line between the spectators and the players, because there were so few of you guys on production. And so it was you guys didn't have time to manage any of that, because you were you were trying to make sure that challenges were set up and ready and run challenges and get through tribals and make sure that we had a winner by Sunday afternoon. So that was probably more of my concern and things that we were kind of talking about. Hopefully she's not giving information that other people, that they shouldn't be having, because that wouldn't be fair. But, yeah.
Absolutely, yeah. And then, so we're back to... You're getting ready for, I believe, would be day three. So you was the merge known then, or was that announced in the morning? Was it just you and Joseph, and you're waiting to see what your future was, or did you know it was the merge that morning?
No, we merged that night. So we had we merged at the end of, so that would be at the end of Saturday, right? Or the end of Friday. I think it was the end of Saturday we merged. And then we had all Saturday night together, and then Sunday morning, I believe. Yeah, yep, definitely. Sunday morning was our first challenge post-merge, which was the gross food eating challenge, which I was just going into the game. That was the one thing that I expected to be there, because you can't have Survivor without a gross food eating challenge. And I also knew that that would be something that I would struggle with. But I mean, like, I'm willing to try, I'm willing to do my best, but I knew I would struggle with it. So when we got to that challenge and John announced that there would not be, well, at the end of the challenge, whoever the last person was to finish their stuff would just be eliminated from the game. So they don't get voted out, they just get eliminated. And immediately I was like, oh, this is not good for me. So we went into the first round and we had John had like three different categories and three types of food in each category. We had like a liquid, a protein, and a vegetable, I believe. So he would randomly draw one liquid, one protein, and one vegetable, throw those three ingredients in a blender, dump it into a cup for us, and we had to drink it. And I think it was the first like three people to complete it stepped back and they were safe. And so we kept going down like that until we had one person remaining. So, and some of the ingredients were like beer, warm beer, and milk, and Brussels sprouts. We had bloodworms. We had, I don't remember, sardines, I think. Yeah, things that shouldn't go together. So we had the first round. I believe that there was a beer in that, and I do not drink beer at all. And so that one was disgusting because anything mixed with beer, I think is gross for me.
Same here for sure. I hate beer.
Yeah. So just the beer alone in that one was gross. So I didn't get through that one. Then we had the second one. Once again, I don't even remember what was in that one. We had the second one. Then we had the third one. And also the quantity that we had to drink each time kept increasing. So I was hoping to be able to get through on the first one so that, because that was the least amount that we had to drink. And that way I just didn't have to worry about it. But that did not happen. So I was in the third round. And I think there were three of us in that round, me and two other people. And that one was milk and Brussels sprouts and live bloodworms all blended up together. And we had to drink it. And I am a huge fan of milk. I love milk and I drink a lot of it. So I was like, okay, if there's ever one that I'm going to be able to be successful at, it's going to be this one because I drink milk all the time. So I have to do this. But it was a big cup full. So I tried, I mean, I drank it as fast as I could. It didn't even taste gross. You couldn't, as long as you didn't think about the bloodworms being in there, it just tasted like cold broccoli mixed with milk. It wasn't that bad. Mm-hmm. I just couldn't drink it fast enough. So the other two guys like destroyed me. They had it gone way before I was even close to having it finished. So I got eliminated from the game right there. I think if we had gone to tribal council, I would have been fine. But because I can't drink fast enough, I got eliminated.
Which stuff like now, that happened. Michael, it happened in season one and two. We had eliminations that were like that. And I think Andy advocated that stuff like that never happened again, which I support entirely. Yes. So, but yes, I think William was about
to. So funny. Because, the two people, the only two people who have been eliminated this way are now, like, very core members of our productions.
Yes. It was so disappointing, though, to, like, of all the ways to be taken out of the game, for that to be how I got eliminated.
And you didn't get to go to tribal council, but do you have, what is your gut, or what is, you know, you're talking to people from, you know, into Sunday, what would have happened if it hadn't been the elimination the way it was? Do you have a pretty good gut reaction of what would have happened? Or
Well, in talking to people once they got, so I was the first person on the jury. In talking to people as they came on to the jury, it, which that's when people are going to be more honest with you than what they may have said in the game. But it sounded like I definitely, like the two tribes both were wanting me and Joseph to go with them, to work with them, to take the other majority tribe out. And it sounds like I was not a target anytime soon. I mean, I don't know that they would have been excited. Like, I don't know that anyone was planning on taking me to the end at that point. But if I had made it further and been able to continue talking to them, then maybe I could have tried to create some alliances or something. But at that time, I don't think I was even on anybody's radar because they both needed me and Joseph to take the, to bring the other tribe's numbers down some.
Oh, it's unfortunate, but I hated to watch that. And then we became friends. I don't know if, I think after season one, for sure, like it was just that instant connection, but what was it like to watch the remainder of the season? Just because I think we even moved tribal council that last day. Cause it was, I think we were all exhausted and we were trying to, I don't even know why tribal council moved, but it ended up being like in the middle of the road and Bob was running tractors. I'm like, Bob, shut up for a minute. We're trying to do tribal council, man.
Yeah, I think it got moved partially because of the time that it was taking for everyone to walk over to tribal and walk back, and then partially because everyone was just so exhausted. But it was, I mean, it was fun to at least be able to be on the jury, so I still got to be a part of the game. I still got to watch. I mean, I could have watched either way because everything was so open, but I got to be a part of listening at tribal council, and I got to be a part of making a decision for who would be the winner at the end. So I was thankful to at least have made it that far and be able to have a say in the rest of the game.
And why did you vote the way you did at the end? And did you vote for the winner? I don't have my stats in front of me.
I wasn't really sure because I didn't talk a lot to Russell or Daniel, so I didn't really know much about their game pre-merge. So I didn't really know who to vote for because I hadn't worked with either one of them. So I really needed to, like, I needed them to answer the questions from the jury, and like I needed them to sell to me why they should win. And I mean, even partway through the questions, I still really had no idea who I wanted to vote for. I kept going back and forth, but then one of the questions was something like, tell me why the other person shouldn't win or something like that. And Russell basically just said, I'm not going to say anything negative about Daniel, which I think is really respectful. It's a really kind thing to say. And honestly, it's probably something that I would have said if I was up there. But for me, not really knowing much about either one of their games, I needed them to answer it. And Daniel was able to answer it about like saying why he should win over Russell. And so ultimately I decided to vote for Daniel because I felt like he gave more in those answers than Russell did. And that's what I needed to be able to vote. So I voted for Daniel and Russell ended up winning. And I think Russell is a great winner and I'm really glad that he won. But based on the information I had, I felt like I couldn't vote for him.
Well, it makes sense because you're the juror and you need your answer. And it's hard to, I've been that far in like non-live games and I know it's hard to, you know, answer the jury. And, you know, it's sometimes hard for people to cut other people up, but that's sometimes what the juror wants and wants to kind of know, you know, why they should win and why should you win. And that's not mean. It's just the truth. So.
Right. Yep. Absolutely. I think either one of them would have been great winners, but yeah, I'm glad that Russell won. He's a very deserving winner.
And our wrap party, I'm trying to even remember that last day. It's like a blur to me. My shoes were destroyed. Like we were exhausted. You were exhausted. So what were your memories from that last day? Besides after Russell's declared the winner and gets the what was it called back then? The Bobster. Yeah.
Yep. The Bobster. He got the first ever Bobster. We didn't go to the house because once again, Bob didn't actually own the house. So we just kind of stayed out on the property. We actually might've been, I don't remember exactly. We might've been by one of the yurts. I think that's where we were. And we just had, I think we had like burgers and corn on the cob maybe. It was just like a small little end of the event meal where everybody got to kind of talk together and just get to know each other outside of the game. And it was a lot of fun, but I had to get back to teach the next day because I only had 2 days that I could take the time off. Mm-hmm. So the game ended on Sunday. I had to fly back to Illinois and drive back to Macomb and be ready to teach on Monday morning. So my dad and I had to eat pretty quickly. I feel like we had maybe 30 minutes to an hour. It was maybe an hour to get to kind of hang out with everybody afterwards. But then we had to rush back to the airport and get back home. So that was kind of disappointing that I didn't get to spend a lot of time at the after party with everybody. That's definitely something that I highly recommend for anybody that plays any live game, actually, is make sure that you have plenty of time at the after party because you are going to want to talk to these people. They're like your family. You're not going to want to leave right away. And I didn't realize that going into it, that I was going to have such a close bond with all of these people. But so my memory is pretty, I don't have a lot from that because I had to rush off
so quickly. Who are you still pretty close in contact with from season one? And maybe, you know, who's the most and who, you know, it's like the real show. Who have you not even interacted with on social media maybe even since season one? Like, who's the closest and who's the least close?
I don't talk to a lot of people from season one because I felt like season one was a lot more like John's friends and Bob's friends and maybe not their close friends, but just people that they knew would be interested in something like this. So they all kind of came out and did it for Bob and did it for John. And I didn't know anybody going into it. Like I found out later that several of them actually did have connections within the game. Like maybe they weren't really close, but they definitely knew who some other people were. And I didn't have that going into it at all. So it definitely feels like it was more of just like a friendly group of people gathering together, which is fine. It's great. I love that cast, but I would say the people that I've stayed the closest to are the people that continue to volunteer or are on production, like Jen, I'm really close to, which is John's daughter. Obviously, I talk to you and John a lot because we're all on the production team together. Probably of the players, I talk to Mark quite a bit. Because him and his wife, Christy, volunteer every year. So I always catch up with them and it's fun to talk about our tribe from season one. And Steve Morin, I talk to a lot. I try to keep up with him. And actually, I talk to Brett quite a bit, not because of DWSC, but because we've ended up playing a couple of other live games together. And so just because of our connection from DWSC, the next time we ended up getting thrown together we already had that connection. So even though him and I never talked during DWSC, we never worked together, we still had that same background, that same game that we played together. So because of that, we have definitely grown closer as friends through the years. I talked to Daniel some, which his is very similar. We didn't really connect a lot in the game. We didn't play together much, but because we had that connection, when we've met up for future events and things like that, we already had that connection. I'm trying to think. Oh, Steve Jackson, he volunteers at our work weekends and stuff, so I enjoy getting to catch up with him throughout the year. Trying to think on my tribe, I think that's all that I really talk to much anymore.
I know I've seen Lou, Tim, and Russell around volunteering a lot.
Yes. I definitely catch up with them every year. Lou wasn't able to be here last year, but he came the first year that we had Survival Challenge on our property. And it's always fun to catch up with them and talk to them. And since I talk to Jen a lot, then I also have that connection with Tim too. And I enjoy catching up with him and talking to him. Trying to think if there's anybody else.
Okay. Has Russell been here every single year?
I don't think Russell was here last year because I believe his grandson had like a baseball tournament or something that he was doing and he wasn't able to make it. But other than that, he's been back every year, and he was here the first year that we had it on our property.
So I think the streak for like former players were, because what was your role? You came back to support your husband and two, but you were you spectating? You didn't have a formal role. I don't think I wasn't there, or did you have a role? And I don't know.
I told John that I would help, and I helped a little bit with challenge setup. But once I knew that Ian was playing, I told John that he asked if I wanted to watch challenges or like kind of what role I wanted to have. And so once I knew Ian was playing, I told him that I definitely wanted to be able to watch all of the challenges. Mm-hmm. But then outside of that, I was happy to help with whatever they needed. So that year I did some challenge setup, and I was a spotter for some of the challenges. I wasn't a huge volunteer the second season, but starting in the third season, that's when I started tribe handling.
And how did that process, what was this kind of the connection, how did that start? Because you were a tribe handler, then you became like the tribe handler, so.
Yeah, so I had the best teacher ever for tribe handling. So in season three, they had like pairs of tribe handlers, so that way we could kind of have some sort of a break where maybe one of us started early and the other person stayed late or whatever. So I was paired with Kevin Thurber, and he was a tribe handler for season two. So then in season three, we both did it together. And so he taught me like how to be a good tribe handler, like, you know, be nice to them, but you can't be too nice. Like, you can't let them walk all over you. You have to make sure you get them where they're supposed to be. So sometimes you kind of have to push them and be like, it's time to go. You guys need to go right now. You're there to support your tribe and cheer for your tribe, but you also have to make sure that they listen to you and respect when it's time, like when you say it's time to do something, that they get up and do it. But he was a great tribe handler, and I'm so glad that I was paired with him for that year, because I feel like he helped to set me up for success for the future of like eventually becoming the lead tribe handler and kind of organizing the tribe handlers and being in charge of that.
So, geez, what are, I'm even trying to think, like, we've talked about, it's so funny, like, talking to you about your actual experience, because A, it was so long ago, but two, you've become such a big part of this event as a whole, and to where it's be very hard to imagine where we would be today, quite literally, because you host the actual, like, where we are today. So, yeah, I don't know where we would be hosting today if it wasn't for your involvement. But I know we always talk about the impact, you know, survival challenge has had on your life, and obviously it's had literally a massive impact on your life. But maybe a better question for you is that, how has the experience been being able to continue to provide that experience and even better ones year after year?
It's such a huge blessing. I love this event, and I love seeing the connections that people get from this event. And so, I mean, being a volunteer and being a tribe handler, I mean, that's one thing. Like, you get to see the connections, you get to be a part of that, you get to know that you helped bring these people together. But hosting it is completely different, because, I mean, like you said, if I wasn't involved with it, and then eventually Ian also involved with it, then who knows where it would be today. I mean, they would have found a location somewhere, but who knows where in the country it would have been at. And just knowing that we are providing the space that people get to come and meet for the first time and either sleep out in the pouring rain or deal with the ridiculous heat or whatever else gets thrown at them. Like, those are the things that make this event so unforgettable. And believe it or not, sleeping out in the pouring rain or pushing through a challenge in the scorching heat, like, those are the things that bring you together, because no one else in the world experienced what you all experienced together. So whether you were in an alliance in the game or you were trying to vote each other out, it doesn't matter. You will be close to these people for the rest of your life, because no one else can understand what you went through. And so being able to provide that for people is just such a huge blessing.
And we really appreciate the transition to your property and how seamlessly that really went. Even season 6, we were anxious, but it all came together, and season 7 did. And, you know, the emergency, we're all dealing with that and what the future holds. But one thing I don't know if you mentioned when I had some technical challenges, but, you know, over the course of time, your season had the oldest cast, and, you know, two of those individuals from not your tribe, but from your cast. And, you know, you talked about your connection with one of them, but do you want to spend a little bit of time and talk about Mr. Dan Nolan, Mr. Kevin Thurber, and just their, how they impacted your life and maybe their presence at those first 5 seasons?
Yeah. Dan, I didn't get to really talk to him a lot when we played in season 1, but when I got voted out, he came up and was like, hey, I loved getting to watch you play. And like, he was just really kind and said that he really had, like, hoped that we could play together and get to meet each other. And so it was just, like, he was just a very kind, sweet person. And then every year after that, just getting to see him and catch up with him. And he was just that same kind person who was always like, okay, so how's life going? What's happening with you? And I got to meet his family and his daughter. And every year they came to Maine. And he would always bring all of his Survivor memorabilia that he had, and they would put it on display where people could come through and look at things from Survivor and from all these different seasons. And that was really cool of him to just to bring all that stuff mm-hmm. and put it out there for everybody to see. And he was a huge supporter of the event. And so, yeah, he was a great person. And then Kevin, I talked about him a little bit, for the tribe handling. He was such a great teacher, and someone that I could learn about tribe handling from. And he was very rough on the outside. Like, if you just saw him passing by, you might think that he's like this grumpy guy, but he has the like sweetest, biggest heart. He's very caring. He loves his friends and his family and this event. And he's an amazing challenge builder. He built the, like, all of the huge challenges that you see that we use even still today, like the carts and the ladder puzzle and things like that. He created those and he built those, and he just is so amazing at that. And he's another person that is a very, very kind person and very loving.
Yeah, I echo those sentiments entirely. And both gentlemen, for Survivor memorabilia, for me to get excited, Dan would bring stuff out to Bob's that I would be just on the ground and like, we got to set this up. But can I see Richard Hatch's journal, Dan? He's like, oh, wait till the end of the event. I might let you look at it and read his journal. Then it didn't actually happen. But and then Kevin, just the honoriness, and like, he would have been a medevac like the other guys from your tribe, but he had a broken rib and he made you guys vote him out. He wouldn't quit. That's just who Kevin was. So.
Yep, that's exactly who he is.
An old stubborn man who we built our bond by being guys and talking smack to each other, and that's how we that's how we became buds. But
and I definitely think that's Kevin. Like, that's who he is with a lot of people. He just, like I said, like on the outside he might look like this grumpy guy who isn't very friendly, but that's not who he is at all. He doesn't want you to think he has like this huge heart and he's very caring, but he truly is so caring and has such a huge heart.
1000%. I'm trying to think of other things we should cover, because I think you've covered so much and you're such a huge part of it. And the audio was challenging, but those couple months from, you know, when Bob and Peggy pulled out till y'all talked to John, it was a lot of, I had a lot of calls with John, like, you know, strategizing and thinking of any contacts. And it's been serendipitous that, you know, your property's been made available, and the bonds we've made. I do feel like there is a bit of a separation from the Maine folks and the Illinois folks. I don't think it's intentional. I think a lot of that's geographical. I don't think there's like, you know, anything specific with that, but it is just interesting. I hope more of the Maine people can, you know, come out to Macomb, and it's a great venue. It's not the easiest place to fly into like Durham was, but it's a beautiful place once you get there. So,
yeah, I definitely think that a lot of it was like all the people that Bob and Peggy had coming and helping when it was in Maine. Like, I think a lot of that was just that they live so close, and so it's so easy for them to just drive and get there. And now that it's in Illinois, it's so much like they would have to fly to get here. And like you said, even after you fly, you still have to drive to get here. And so I think it's just not as convenient, and it makes it harder for them to still be able to help and participate, which is definitely disappointing, because there are some people from Maine that I would love to be able to see and catch up with again, especially after it's been several years. But I think it's just that it was so convenient for them before.
Oh, yeah. William, do you have any other questions you have, or Jordan, is there anything we didn't talk about directly that you want to talk about? Because it's great. You're the first season one person, and we're going to try to, you know, get some other folks that are still active in our community, get Russell as a winner here and some other players. But anything you want to talk about that we didn't ask or mention?
I don't think I have anything else.
No, I don't have anything else either. This has been great.
Yeah.
Well, we appreciate your time, and I'm looking forward to getting season two in the mix shortly. I won't speak for, I mean, William's on board, and hopefully the producer will get in here and co-host it. Because, I mean, I'll sit on the call. I've watched season two from YouTube, so I feel very disjointed. But I think Mr. Baker can be very objective and talk about it. And he's definitely an expert on season two, and he's a great friend I've made. It's amazing the people that came to our wedding just from people we met in the woods in Maine or in the woods in Illinois. So it's just nuts, the family you were speaking about. And I've, you know, I'm not a player. I'm just, you know, OG producer except for season two. So it's just, it's crazy, these bonds.
It really is. It's like a family. There's no other way to describe it. It's this crazy family that just constantly keeps growing and growing. And we get to have a family reunion once a year when there's not a pandemic going on.
And hopefully that won't be the case in 2021. And we've got amazing things possibly in store for the future of Survival Challenge. So make a video, people, if you're listening to this and you've wanted to play. Jordan, why should somebody apply, especially women? Why should people and women apply to play this game, and what could they get from it?
Well, I mean, like I said before, just in general, like if Survivor is something that you think that you might want to try or you've always wanted to do, this is like going to be one of the closest things that you can get to being on the real show. And so you can, I mean, just live games in general are like something to just test yourself and see if you can do it. I mean, we had Kurt, who played, I believe, in season four, maybe. And I remember him saying that he wanted to be on Survivor and he was really excited about it. And by the end of DWSC, he was like, you know, I realized that this is not something that's for me. I'm not good at it, and I'm no longer interested in playing Survivor. And I mean, that's good too. Like, it just kind of lets you know if that's something that you can actually do. It's a great experience, whether it is something that you think that you, or something that you ultimately think that you're able to do, or decide that maybe it's not right for you. You're going to get lifelong friends out of this, people that you talk to daily or weekly, even years after the event. It's really hard to explain to people that don't know what it's like, because it's just an experience like nothing else that you've ever had. But when you walk away from it, you've got these unbreakable bonds with these people. And I think for me, it was really cool to see what I was able to do, things that I never thought, like sleeping outside, and not even just sleeping outside, but sleeping outside in the dark completely alone before this. I never, ever would have done that. I wouldn't even consider it. And like, I wouldn't even think that it's something I could do. But I went out and I did it, and I was fine. And it made me really proud to see some of those things that I was able to do. So I think women specifically, just in general, like, this isn't something that women are geared towards as much as men. And I think that it's important for women to show that we can do it too. And like, we're just as strong as the men are. I mean, we've had really strong physical women in previous years. And that's really cool to see as well. So I think, and for women, you have a much better shot because there are fewer women that apply just in general. So if it's something that you're interested in or something that you just want to test yourself and see how far you can make it and see what you can push yourself to do, this is the perfect event for you.